Hey, it's Elisa Monjadas, Managing Director of Stories Bureau, and this is my co-host, Creative Director of Stories Bureau.
Hey, everyone, I'm Corey Grushka, and this is B2B Creatively, where we want to talk about all things B2B creative, from trends to best practices, campaigns that succeeded.
So that all of us together can learn how to B2B creatively.
If you're a marketer, you'll learn how to be more creative, and if you're a creative, we're going to make you more strategic. All right, Elisa, I'm pumped for this conversation today. Our guest today was not always a creative, but is one of the most talented creatives I think we've ever worked with at Stories Bureau. And to me, one of the themes we'll talk about is going into different fields and transferring skills from one field to another. As we've talked about, I think even on this podcast, so I was an animator, I was an illustrator, then an animator, then a lawyer, then an entrepreneur, and now kind of
everything.
Found my way into design and creative.
Renaissance.
And you, Elisa, have also bounced around quite a bit. So I guess my question to kick off to you is, how do you transfer skills, and what is the most valuable, from one field into another, in terms of the skills moving?
Okay, let me just also say that we have one of our coolest guests, just letting
coolest
everybody
also.
Know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Okay, so when I was doing executive coaching, I would ask people about your zone of genius versus your zone of excellence. And your zone of excellence is like things that you're really good at, but your zone of genius is like where you thrive. And where you thrive doesn't necessarily have to be a specific skill. So Corey, when you were a lawyer, you were really good at like looking at the details. And now as an art director, creative director, you're also really good at looking at the details. You were really good at looking at all the different possibilities of a situation. You still are. Like, those are some of your zone of genius, and it doesn't really matter what you're doing or where you are. You're still taking those with you wherever you go. So, like, when I think about transferring skills, I think about those, like, big things that you're good at. Maybe you just have a good eye. Like, you've done animation, you've done video. Well, you're still using that eye. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I look at it.
My name is Ben Tuber. I am a freelance art director. I've worked with brands such as Vice and Refinery 29 and Netflix and HBO in the entertainment space and branded content. I think I specialize in branding and lettering and motion, working all together, because I am a digital designer and I'm really trying to get people's attention in an extremely chaotic world. And that's what I strive to do, is when you're scrolling down Instagram, is to stop you in your tracks and get you to click on the content I make.
One of the most interesting things about you to me is your studies. So you went to University of Chicago and you studied. Talk a little bit about like your background. How do you found your way into being a master creative?
I mean, I studied, like, long story short, liberal arts. I guess, like, where I grew up, it was assumed that you would just go to college and then, like, you know, you want to go to, like, a really good college. And I certainly, I mean, I love my time in Chicago. Like, as I get older and think about having kids, I'm not necessarily sure I'd give them the same advice, because I went in there and I came out with maybe zero like vocational skills, unless I wanted to go in and be an academic. Because I studied, like, you know, long story short, liberal arts, but it was ancient history, which still deeply fascinates me. But there's about one or two careers you can do with that, and that's also teach at U Chicago, or anywhere else. And I mean, I think that stuff is lovely, and I think the idea was that you go. What my parents taught me or showed me was they were trying to instill this idea that you go and you get a liberal arts education and then you can kind of take it anywhere. I happened to graduate right into like the Great Recession, so that wasn't exactly a possibility, but I think that might have been maybe true in like previous generations. But I also spent so much time doing sketch and improv there that I really thought I would do. That was like, if I had to say I really majored in anything, it was that. I mean, we took it really seriously.
Sketch, which, comedy, and improv?
And writing. I wanted to write for TV. And UChicago has a kind of like, I mean, you know, this sounds silly, but has like a fabled kind of improv. I mean, Chicago itself has like a fabled
Second
improv,
City and all that
stuff. Yeah, the same guy who founded Second City also founded the improv group at UChicago. So it was like, they took it very seriously. But all this is to say that, like, I thought, okay, you know, I can go write for TV, but my heart wasn't quite in it. After I graduated, I really, for a number of years, was just really lost and working on some screenplays and pilots and stuff. But the one thing that I did consistently from grade school through today is just like obsessively doodle and draw. And I've always been really obsessed with graphics. And even when I was doing shows at UChicago, like those improv shows, like making the posters and creating a branding for it was kind of the best part. So, I think like people are always really taken aback and probably impressed, even though I think, the fact that I went to, or that I have this like liberal arts education, I'm doing something totally different. And I think that's very helpful, at least of the very fact that like, oh, if you want to talk ancient history, I can specifically like Near Eastern history, I can do that. Doesn't come up in conversation every now and then. But I think that just kind of like, I do think my parents were right in the sense that like there is something, the education really did like instill in me, and maybe my parents did even more than that, like a curiosity about things. And even today, if I'm working, sometimes I just like throwing on like a lecture from some YouTube channel from some university, because I just find it kind of intriguing and relaxing, and also like I think I did a lot of my best work in college just doodling in my notebook during the lecture. I probably should have been taking notes. I did not graduate cum laude or anything like that, but I did graduate with like a ton of like doodles in my sketchbook. And then at some point after like floundering for a few years, I think a friend of mine told me, hey, you should just do this, and he was totally right. So that's kind of where I got into graphic design, which may be what I should have been doing the whole time, but
you had like this whole exciting adventure up until then.
Sure. Yeah. No. I mean, I think it's great. I finished paying off my debt, fortunately. So like finally, I can look back.
The same.
No, not at all. For the rest of my life, I don't think I'll say the same.
I'm blossoming slowly, so I had a lot of time to like be by myself and pay off the debt. But I can finally say that like, oh, okay, yeah, wow, that was a great experience. Now that the debt's behind me, while I had the debt, I was like, oh, what the hell did I do all that for? But now that I did, yeah.
So one of the things I love about your work is like it's such a unique graphical style. Like,
thank you.
Stuff that. It's just very ownable. I feel like a lot of the stuff that you've done, and it's so colorful and graphic heavy, and the animation is obviously super tight, and you have a real focus on GIFs and motion. How did you go from, you don't have to tell the full story, but like ancient civilizations to the like this kind of a niche, you know what I mean, within even the design and the motion world?
I think one of the reasons that ancient civilizations, specifically Egypt, I grew up in New York, and I would go to them. My parents would take me to the Met a lot, and I was the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I was just so fascinated by the Greek and Egyptian center, the sections, especially Egypt, because I do think there is like a graphic quality to ancient art. I guess the Greeks kind of made it very, I don't know what I'm looking at, like classical and looks, you know, humans look like humans. But there's just the kind of graphic iconography of Egypt, I think, really fascinated me. And then I also just think like, I honestly, even when I started studying that, I never really thought I would do that. So that's almost just like an aside. I think growing up, I tend towards maximalism. I know you can't really see that behind me, but in front of me, there's so much crap. I mean, if I could turn the camera around, I would show you. I just love stuff, and I think that has to do with growing up in a city, so, I mean, specifically New York, but I'm also just like deeply fascinated by the visual vocabulary of all cities, and just kind of a sensory overload. And I think I just graphics really fascinated me, and GIFs specifically. I think it has to do, or one of the things that really intrigues me is just like neon signs and kind of walking through the city. And I've always loved GIFs, and I think the connection there is that like a neon sign, essentially, especially one that moves, is a GIF, but it's told in like two frames. Let's say it's just like a cocktail glass pouring or whatever. And that to me is just so, there's something like so beautiful about how tacky and like over the top all that stuff is. But I kind of think the same way if you're like scrolling on Instagram and you see something moving in a very simple but eye-catching way, it is like a bar coaxing you with like a neon sign of a of a lady. Or like, you know, I grew up in New York, and it was kind of like exiting the battle days. And I remember I would like take a cab from Penn Station to my house, like to like Upper West Side, and you'd go along 8th Avenue, and it was just all these like porno stores. And like, and just the neon outside of them was so appealing and cool. And I think there's something in there about like the sort of like seediness that always attracted me. Not the actual stores themselves, but just sort of like the Vegas-y red light district quality of it all. Totally. And I find that totally gorgeous, really.
So you've had like a really, in a very short period of time, like Vice and Refinery, like really high-end B2C branded content work. In the B2C space, in the social media space, it's interesting how like the design trends are moving on in web, and in a lot of different ways, design is moving in a minimalist direction, where simplicity and negative space and elegance is at a premium. But in social, like you're saying, it's maximalist. Like it's about arresting graphics that are arresting. It's about catching people's attention immediately. Exactly. And that's your world, like no question. And we haven't done on the B2C side of our business at Stories Bureau, we've done a few, I think, significant projects with you. But I think one of the coolest things about bringing you in, and I think we need to start doing it more often, Alisa and Ben, if you maybe after the summer, if you're starting to be available.
Absolutely.
But I feel like that's probably where B2B is going to go too, right? Because like it'll just follow the overall trends. B2B is, you know, like...
Well, like they're saying LinkedIn is being heavily influenced by TikTok right now, like the style of videos. And you think a B2B like video being TikTok style, like just a couple of years ago, not even like 5-10, but a few, it would have been like, absolutely not. Like no memes, right. No this, no that, especially for a serious company. Like small companies could get away with stuff, but large corporations, they were steering clear from that kind of work. And now it's different.
I think it's kind of just a general pattern. I mean, like the kids are always right eventually. And like it does like trickle down or up. And I'm just thinking about like even like advertising, like I'm thinking of like Mad Men at the very end. They have that advertising that's really like hippie-ish. And that's what like the kids that were doing 5 years ago. So like basically like it like, and the coolest stuff right now to me, even though it's not something that comes natively to me because I am like an elder millennial, but like TikTok is amazing. I mean, I don't want to watch anything else but TikTok because I find just the weird stuff on it so fascinating. And like, and it's its own genre of like content creation and style and video. So like, and like, yeah, is that going to be used for corporate stuff? No, but like, will I think advertisers sort of glean the best parts of it and like use it to there? And will also just become like a cultural, it's becoming like cultural vocabulary. So it's eventually going to.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned even in Mad Men, because like I was thinking for, it was funny, like 10 years ago, I remember looking at, I think I probably got into the creative space full time like 10 years ago or so. And I remember looking at the ads because at the time, TV was still preeminent. like the 30-second TV commercial was still like, you know, what the thing. Did. Brands were still talking to you. It wasn't a two-way conversation, mm-hmm. but at the same time, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those were all really popping off. And the cutting edge conversations and the cutting edge interactions were happening there. Mm-hmm. The writing was on the wall that TV was going away, but it just clung to this kind of like very sanitized, very like a talking at you type of TV ads, even on social media, you know? And there was a switch, I don't know when it happened, but when it was a switch where it was like undeniable that social media was going to be the way to communicate and TV was a thing of the past. Mm-hmm. Kind of like when you went from the 1960s and TV to the 1970s, like hippies in general, mm-hmm. like the, it just, layers were peeled off the way people communicate in B2C. And I feel like it's now full circle. The only way a brand can communicate is with authenticity and with an understanding that they're not going to fully control the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fully found its way into like now social, like you said, TikTok is the way people communicate and Instagram and whatever, and then YouTube and YouTube Shorts. But I think that has completely changed B2C advertising. Mm. That's probably where B2B is going next. You know, I know we did B2B stuff. I don't think you've done a ton of B2B work outside of us, but maybe you have done some other.
No, you guys are mostly it, yeah.
But like almost for sure, like you said, the kids are right at the end of the day. We're probably in a transition in B2B. Lisa, you were saying how LinkedIn is influenced by TikTok. I bet that accelerates. You know what I mean? I bet short form.
And it's going to accelerate really fast.
All to say that like, hopefully,
I mean, my attention span wasn't what it was. So everything needs to be that kind of tailored to that, like, you know, you know what you do on your phone. But I was thinking about that. There's an interesting point that made me think, Corey, about like, because I work in branded content and the whole kind of conceit there is like, well, it's a brand, but it's supposed to seem natural. And you're kind of towing that line. And that's so tricky because the nature of all these trends is that like, well, at least kids can like sniff it a phony in a second. So like, mm-hmm. but on B2B, it's a little bit different because it's a different audience. So you kind of just want to capture what's like exciting. And I think to go back to B2C and like branded content, I'm not a strategist. So really like I'm more just like, you know, I help them graphically communicate what they want to do. But there is something where it's like, you know, I see the best kind of B2C, at least branded content, is stuff that isn't like that, like knows it's an ad. It's like, it's mm-hmm. pretty self-aware, but it still has like something interesting to say. And it still is kind of like looks good or is interesting or is genuine. So like, I think those ads that are like trying to create a viral moment, I think everyone, my opinion is that they're all kind of like just too cringy and desperate. But stuff that is like really knows that like, okay, yeah, I'm making video that's gonna like that you can wash down easily on TikTok and just looks good there is like the move, because they're not pretending not to be an ad. They're just making good stuff for the platform and mm-hmm. for the attention spans that
I remember when TikTok expanded the time that like they could have a video content, and it was like up to 8 minutes. I don't know what it is right now. And I was like, 8 minutes? No one has the attention span for that. Then I see this kid on the couch, not even really looking, like with the phone like this, talking for 8 minutes. And I was like glued because of what he was saying.
Yeah.
It was like a normal, I felt like I was just hanging out with this kid. And it felt cool in the moment. And I was like, okay, well, I guess it can't, like all my marketing like stuff was like, what? I would have said this is the worst idea ever. And like, here I am consuming this. But like, you're right. When young people don't have any constraints, they're not a brand, they're just themselves. They can kind of do whatever they want and get away with it. And then mm-hmm. if you have enough of those kids doing the same thing, it becomes a trend. Mm-hmm. And now, like, watch these dumb 8-minute videos like come on LinkedIn in 5 years of like someone
or
not
tomorrow,
even looking,
not looking at the camera. You already see some of them.
Yeah, 8 minutes seems like a movie.
Stuff. a bunch of stuff more and more in my feed that's borrowed. Forget not being built for LinkedIn or whatever. Like, it's just pulled off of another platform.
And it kind of makes you think, like, well, what is good? Mm-hmm. Like, we're, you know, Corey, you and I are like B2B strategists, right? So like, what is good? What is the strategy that's going to meet our audience, our clients' audience's needs? Like that, it kind of blows it up.
I think, Ben, what you said also kind of hits the nail on the head, where you have to have a level of self-awareness. Like, authenticity doesn't mean it has to be like fully naked and like opening the door to any conversation or any interpretation. It could be like, it just needs to be self-aware, to your point. Like, this is an ad. We get that it's an ad, but it's going to look ridiculously crazy. You know what I mean? Like,
and in the brand colors and fonts.
Yeah. Right. And we're going to take risks, but it's still, we get what we're doing here. We're trying to sell you sneakers, you know?
I mean, my favorite art is still ads. Like, it always has been. Is like I said, like walking around a city and just kind of like being like, that's to me is like the coolest stuff. I don't really have, I mean, there's some, you know, fine art that I guess I enjoy. But to me, like, I think it can be totally cool and engaging. And also, I think, like, you mentioned the kid speaking for 8 minutes. I mean, like, that's, there's the authenticity to that, where like, and just like influencers in general as a marketing tactic is like, you know, if they seem honest, people, because there's a lot of things that I've saved and tagged and whatever in Instagram that are advertisements, and maybe it's like a recipe or something, but like, this is how I did tonight's dinner using Hidden Valley Ranch or whatever. And it's like, I mean, I was like, hey, that's a good recipe. I'm going to save that. And, you know, because like they've partnered with someone who is actually a chef and who actually just makes these videos. And I mean, like, yeah, I know it's an ad, but cool. Mm-hmm. Look what they did. Cool. I'm into it. So
if we take the assumption at its face that like B2C is evolved or has evolved, B2B will follow suit, then, or it's moving in that direction, then we can look to B2C to see like what's next in B2B or what's next even to experiment with in B2B, which we've done. I think we're going to keep doing it. But from you, so let's talk about B2C in that context. Like, what the audience has to like look at your portfolio. Is it bentuber.com?
Yeah.
BenTuber.com.
Yeah.
And they'll immediately get like what we're talking about with the super graphical and super colorful. But like, what are you seeing in the branded content world in the B2C space that like, have you seen stuff recently that's just super rad and cutting edge?
Yeah, I know I'm talking about influencers like I really know what I'm talking about. But for me, and I think I do to a degree, but I think for me, like graphics and just style is what I find so fascinating. And I think like, I mean, I guess what I'm always I mean, there's always stuff that I'm just constantly sort of like saving stuff and making a note of things. But this kind of like, I guess as a trend overall, I think it's getting a little tired in the B2C place, which means that maybe it's ripe for B2B, but a kind of like Y2K sensibility, meaning like the nostalgia for the days when computers were kind of this novelty and not basically like implanted in our brains. And that just follows like the natural 20-year nostalgia pattern. But for me, the like the 20-year nostalgia pattern, like, you know, or the childhood stuff, which I find most fascinating, comes from like the late 80s, early 90s. But I'm so fascinated to watch like younger generations be enamored by, you know, MS Paint and those kind of graphics and just kind of like early computer style, which is like comforting and also just interesting and wild and kind of not very maximalist. Like you were saying, or like we were talking about earlier, like it's not minimal, like a Windows desktop. There's a lot of crap going on, but the crap is sort of like, and it's a kind of design that I would have, if you would ask me like 10 years ago about it, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so glad we're away from that.
Beyond
I'm so glad we're into like these like lovely kind of Memphis style shapes and everything. Yeah. But now I'm just like, oh my God, give me some. I want Arial type with like a black outline and like the ugliest colors and all over the place. And also like so much of it is like, I imagine a lot of it comes from like, I think East Asia. I was walking around Flushing last night and there was just this like, I think the ascendancy of like China as a cultural force and everything. There's just something about like the sort of maximalism of design I see that comes out of, you know, they're also capable of being extremely minimal and elegant, but there's that maximalism of like early tech computer style. And, and I think there's a way to make it look, you know, not like now it's kind of got a cheekiness. So I don't know if that would fly in a B2B space, but there's a way to like, I just think that overall style is like gaining ascendancy and like will be reflected in B2B somehow. Not like, maybe not branding. I think it's a little too like punk and cheeky.
No, but even campaigns, like every B2B brand launches a campaign a year or multiple campaigns a year. So like something short lived, you know, like I think that could be a huge opportunity.
We have ads right now, like literally in market right now that reference Shakira. It's like wherever, whenever. And then we have insert tech thing. And it's like, and the look isn't that, but like the message is, because we know like that's what people are liking. Like I was recently hanging out with a group of people that were like 10, 15 years younger than me, and they're all listening to music that I listened to in high school, and they thought it was like really cool. And I was like, well, it is, first of all.
Finally, you finally come around. You
Someone
finally
gets
get it.
Me.
Someone gets that we're the best generation.
But they're all like in kindergarten when it's just so funny how like things just come back.
Do you have, Ben, other stuff that you like? I would love to like, honestly, just like video record your creative inspiration, just kind of like flipping through your creative inspiration. But what other stuff that you've seen? I get the retro, the nostalgia thing as a trend. And I think that could be.
Well, like when we were younger, retro was the 70s.
Yeah. And retro now is the 2000s.
What, anything else that you're seeing or that you've seen that really inspired you in terms of straight B2C? You know what I mean? Like,
I'm trying to think of what I'm looking at a lot lately. Another thing that's very kind of Y2K is that like lately I've been very into sort of collage, and I don't do anything. I do not like bust out the glue and scissors, but just the sort of like, it has that analog style, which is another thing that like, I think people crave too, is just like the warmth of kind of throwing things together. And you see a lot of it. This is not something that I even think is particularly new, but I think there's a lot of ways to take it. A collage that's very like, has a look of, glue and scissors. And you see a lot of it in animation too. And I think that stuff is just so appealing.
Like stop motion type stuff.
Exactly, because of the analog thing. And it's also kind of a foil to AI, which is its own. I was talking with a friend about this last night. There's so much AI that I've saved because it's so weird. I think when AI tries to create, it's just so strange. I think there's many ways in which it will make things obsolete, but, and it's something that like, you know, I use a little bit here and there if I need it, but I still think my opinion is like, until AI can like tell a good joke and not just sound like strange or like stilted, then we don't have to really worry about it taking humans because like it makes stuff which humans never could, but it's like it makes stuff that humans just wouldn't. It's just so like, and I think especially in the realm of fine art, like AI has all this like weird stuff going for it. But in terms of advertising, I think it AI will create its own like style and which people will like intentionally use, but I don't think you're fooling anyone really if you say it's like if you try to pass it off as something that like somebody made. It's very, and I've seen, I mean, there's, we could talk forever about AI, but I've seen like, it may replace a certain kind of CGI look because it is computer generated. And there's that certain sort of like, certain kind of like, AI I think is going to replace like stock photography, for instance, when it's going to, and stock illustration, because it has that like sterilized,
shiny,
very kind of like unnervingly shiny, kind of uncanny look to it. And I think like for stock photography and for like decks and stuff, and for just like a photo of a background, like AI will replace that. But I think, like, on the other hand, like, it'll make the stuff that humans make and only humans make that much more appealing. So, like, maybe that's why, like, collage and, like, really analog style stuff is, like, appealing, because it's like AI, it's the simplest thing, but AI couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But AI can do the most complicated. Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. But, like, everything I'm seeing is, like, AI is great at making something that's just so complex because it is so complex. Mm-hmm. But the simplest mm-hmm. thing is still very much in the hands of humans.
How are you? Are you using it in your process at all? Are you using for, like, exploration or ideas? Or, like, how are you using
if I need,
it,
like,
if
a
at all?
Background? I think, like, sometimes on, like, decks, if I can't find the right stock photo, I'll maybe plug something in. And Photoshop has that great generative AI fill now. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. that's cool. But it has yet to really, like, appeal to me. Mm-hmm. I've only seen, like, artists, like, fine artists, basically, like, do just really wild stuff with it. And I think that's so mm-hmm. cool. It just hasn't quite appealed to me. Mm-hmm. And that could just be, like, who I am, or just, like, it hasn't quite reached me yet, but, like, it will. But, like, yeah, Photoshop's got that generative thing. I also think it just looks to me like it's cool, but you know a computer did it, and that totally. Doesn't I just can't it just I don't doesn't I don't feel it on my skin, really.
Ben, what curious about your work with us. So the one project that I remember that was really, really rad, and you went in a Y2K direction with it, was we brought you in to support, to be part of the team on for a branding project for a podcast that we were like a branded B2B podcast that we were producing and then branding.
Mm-hmm. Trace Route. Yeah.
Exactly. So you came on board, you were part of the team, like, your stuff was for sure one of the directions or multiple of the directions that were the kind of pushing the boundary creative directions within the group of concepts. Obviously there's limitations though in the B2B space. I'm sure you run into that in the B2C space as well, in terms of, like, you know, there's guardrails and, like, and there's certain there's, you know, you're getting like iterative feedback that maybe strips down the concept in a fundamental way, and you have to pivot from a creative perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What's your kind of, like, how do you think about that in your work? Maybe for the work we did, where I think we had to pull back. Like, we purposefully had you go wild mm-hmm. so that we could pull back. I don't remember
exactly. But actually, if you think about, like, what Ben did, everything that Ben's saying here, the collage style, like, mm-hmm. well, there was, like, a human talking with, like, a random, like, computer, a random this. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, like, pasted. It looked like it was pasted on those mm-hmm. little short clips, and even the fonts that we use and all of that was very, like, if you just, we'll put it on our show notes, but if you just, like, look at that after hearing what Ben said, you can be like, oh, yeah, I see his hand on this.
I mean, I was working in conjunction with Lisa too, who provided a lot of base of the design. So that was, like, really, and what she provided, like, there were so many opportunities to, it was a real fertile ground for this, for animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Lisa, mm-hmm. our art director, I mean, she really, like, took it further. Like, you were like that, okay, here's a general direction. And then it seemed like it was a collaborative effort with her mm-hmm. and Mathar on our team. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the team, and then, like, Lisa just, like, went hog wild and yeah. and took that, and because the client really liked it, what they liked was how different it was from other mm-hmm. like the traditional B2B.
How do you manage feedback? You know, how do you manage, because I see you as probably majority fine artist, minority commercial graphic designer, yet you're working in branded content. Right. I guess at least for your majority of your professional life. So how do you manage, like, when stuff gets blown up or when stuff
constraints?
Gets constraints, but also revisions that are cutting at fundamentally at the soul of the concept. You know what I mean?
First of all, it's very flattering that you say that, because I definitely, everything you've said is very flattering, but it's very because I see myself as, like, definitely I like working in commercial art, but I think commercial art can be art, however you put it. Or that's, you know, that's what I strive to do. I usually, like I said, like I'm not the strategist, and I have an idea, but like for me, it's at least lately, maybe it's frustrating when you really think, oh, this works, and then someone thinks it doesn't work. But I think I'm really trying to get over that, because other people are often right, or they make you see something that you totally missed because you're so completely wrapped up in what you think is totally right. Mm-hmm. And then when they give you a piece of feedback that, like, as long as it's collaborative, if they say, oh, this isn't working for me, it's like, well, that's not really collaborative. Why isn't it mm-hmm. working for you? But when they do, they usually hit on an insight that you would have never come up with because you can't see outside of your own perspective. So usually, and also, like, I'm really trying to, I know this sounds selfless, but it isn't. I don't want to have to think, like, I'm really trying to communicate what you're, like, to build upon the strategy that the strategists have already come up with. Like, I'm really trying to work with them and not being like, well, I think this, so, like, if it works, if it doesn't work for them, I've done something wrong. And if it does, then we're working together. And that is really the more rewarding part of it, when it's just like, oh, I see what you're saying now. What, because, like, my perspective is going to offer them new insights and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So that's
probably like your background in improv that really
yes,
helps
and
that process.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And actually,
nice
that
callback.
Totally. That was a callback, and like yes, and is an improv thing, but it's a way of life. Basically, what it is like if someone suggests something in improv, and if you say no, the scene is dead and the audience just doesn't want to watch it. But if someone says something crazy, you say, yeah, and I'm also doing this, then everyone's into it. So
yeah,
I think you're totally right about that, Elise.
I'm like kind of like at this point, like creative director, like creative, but also a strategist. And so when I look at, if I'm getting feedback from somebody that I know that I think is wrong, or that I think like potentially could be wrong, or even if it's feedback and I feel differently, to me, it's like, I'm going to give you exactly what you want, and I'm going to do it as best as I can. Mm. Like, I'm going to solve for the problems that you're not seeing in your direction mm-hmm. to us as best I can. But then I'm also going to give you a version of that I think is super rad.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably give you something in between also, you know?
Right, right.
Like, to me, it's almost like the customer is always right
yes.
in some ways, but let's show you how you might be wrong, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And give you it, that's kind of my philosophy on managing.
That makes me think of two things that I heard. Is that like, or it was like a negotiation, it's like an advertisement for a masterclass from negotiation. And I'm sure the class is really cool, but at least the advertisement, the guy was like,
that was the advertisement was really cool too.
It was great.
If you're recalling it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure the rest of the class is interesting, but what the guy said, he was like a hostage negotiator. And he was like, the art of negotiation is making the other side get what you want, but make the other side convince the other side to do what you
want. That it's what they
that
want.
It was their idea.
That it was their idea. Exactly. So it's also like I heard with children, it's just like, well, we can do this or this. And you give them two options and they're like, oh, cool. Then they think they have agency, but really they only have two options. So it's like,
or like my Big Fat Greek Wedding, when it's like the woman is the neck that drives the head of the
yeah,
man.
Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Exactly. So it's like, you think that you're doing it. So like, I think that's kind of the, you give someone a number of options, and when they choose, well, you know, you think, oh, I made the choice, but really you're giving them the three options that you think are going to work best. So who's actually making the choice?
I'll tell you as a dad, Ben, that's right in theory, and it works for a while, but they catch
smart.
On to that
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah. Just like consumers do.
They're like, exactly. Yeah, okay, how about option number three?
Yeah.
Which
oh,
is
that's
like,
not
don't
an
go to sleep until
yeah.
11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, if you could give advice to other designers that have never dabbled in B2B anything design, like what would you tell them for their transition?
I never really want to think of it as different from any other kind of design, only in the sense, like, because you're still advertising for human eyeballs, and I think it's a really, like, I think what interested me, Corey, when you reached out, is that you were like, A, you were enthusiastic about my work, and you thought that I could like bring a lot of value. And that this was something I totally had never done before. And in striving to be as versatile a designer as possible and to get as many like perspectives, I think that's what really interested me about B2B work. in general, because like it's just a totally different, not totally, but it's a different discipline where you have to kind of pare down what you're trying to say, and it's not as maximalist and not as all over the place, and and that I think is for any designer, like it always helps to sort of get a totally different perspective to see how what you're doing is you're limiting yourself by only kind of doing what you enjoy, or only kind of gravitating to the styles of that you think are cool or whatever, because there's actually like a wealth of other really cool stuff and stuff that you totally wouldn't naturally come across on your own.
That's like exactly the reason why we like to bring in B2C people with B2B work, because it goes both ways. Like our B2B clients, like they don't know what's possible for them to be, like how they can get stretched creatively. And this stretches a muscle that they aren't used to stretching either, especially the ones that have been in it for so long with constraints. And there's, I can't tell you how many boring ads there are out there. When we look at our competitor audits, we're like, what? How did this huge company get away with doing this boring thing? And like, let's, you know, shake it up a little bit and bring some, bring a different perspective in.
I think if you look, and it's probably the same in B2C, if you're selling sneakers, you should also look at car commercials. You know, like if you're doing research for a project and the only analogs you're looking at is your immediate competitors or the kind of the category you're in general, or even like part of the industry or the industry, it's like you can go completely outside. You can look at what the NBA is doing, you know, like you can look at, and I think that's definitely been missing in the B2B space, probably even in the B2C space. People, they get just do what,
what you do is what's expected.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a lot to take a risk, but that's how it, and there's no real accounting for it. There's no accounting for like what's going to be successful. You just kind of have to like have your ear to the ground and constantly be looking at stuff to see what looks cool
and experiment. The nice thing about social now, even on the B2B side with LinkedIn and stuff, like content is ephemeral, and like you have lots of opportunities to throw stuff out there and pivot, you know, so stylistically too, you know, content wise too, substantively too, you know. It's, I think we're moving in a wild direction of an explosion of content on all fronts. And B2B is like just realizing it, I feel like, or not even.
I think it's great. I think it's one of the things that like is not lamentable about the weird time in which we live, is that there's just so much out there.
People are going to get what they want.
Well, Ben, this was awesome. We love having you. We hope that this inspires other artists to just kind of continue to learn. I think that's what I got from you. Like, you're a learner no matter what. Like, that's probably your curiosity, I would say, is your like zone of genius that you bring to your work.
It's been great to get to know you. I was pumped to have you on just to be able to like shoot the shit for 45 minutes.
For sure.
But the thing that's most interesting to me is like the sensibilities that you bring to your work. I think from your multiple backgrounds and also the sensibilities you brought to our clients' work, coming from the branded content and the B2C space, it's been super refreshing.
I'm super flattered, and this was great. I will happily do it again, because you know the reason I work for you guys is because you are cool, interesting people, and I think this conversation goes to show that you know this is a cool place with cool people.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Ben.
B2B Creatively is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather DeLeon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you like what you hear, go follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, or Elisa, Corey, and the rest of the team are dishing out tips all week long. Or maybe check out storiesbureau.com. Sign up for our newsletter, and that'll keep you up to date on all the latest trends and best practices in the B2B creative, design, and marketing worlds. Oh, and of course, follow us on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform to get more creative convos like this delivered straight to your feed every month. That's it for this one. So until next time, thanks for listening.